going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday to you all. I'm your host, Nick, joined by my producer, Chrissy. Allie and Amanda are with us as well. We have a fantastic episode for you. Chrissy, how are you?
I'm good. It's snowing.
Oh, I was about to ask you if, like, is the weather changing? It's like, because it's, you know, fucking April.
Yeah, it was warm like yesterday, but today there's like a little spring snow and it's so pretty and I love it and it makes me super happy and I can't wait to go for a walk.
That's exciting, I guess.
Is that weird? Is that a little weird?
It's been really beautiful here and it's like 80 degrees.
Well,
in,
it's LA.
In my tan.
I've been watching you in your pool all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing you on that Instagram.
Crushing life. We have, like I said, a great episode. Let's see here. Other things we're doing on the Vile Files. Go back and check out a kick-ass episode of Ask Nick on last Monday. Another one coming out next week. And we also have Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling with us next Wednesday. That should be fun. Let's tap into my childhood crushes.
I know. Oh, my childhood is so good. I'm so excited.
Wow. Yeah. I want to be like, hey, I wasn't allowed to watch you as a kid. And that's a good.
I'll be like, hey, I'm obsessed with you.
For good reason. Oh, gosh. We are talking plastic surgery today with the very. What do you call him? Is he probably world renowned? He's one of the leading plastic surgeons in the world. He specializes in eyelid surgery, facial reconstruction. I know him because my loving girlfriend Natalie has worked for him. She is a surgical technician who specializes in the plastic surgery space. You know, there's so much talk around plastic surgery nowadays. You have, you know, with social media and the desire to, you know, fix our looks. It's funny because people will often talk about my glow up from the time I was on Andy season. I've been accused of having like facial reconstruction surgery.
Really?
It's like, it's called a beard, people.
You and just got and a haircut.
but my point of saying that is like, I'll get defensive and be like, what the fuck? But also like plastic surgery, is it good? Is it bad? Like, where do we draw the line? Is it dangerous? Is it safe? I think there's a lot of questions and I was kind of curious. I learned a lot from Natalie in terms of like, you know, when I started asking about her work, I heard so much about like, just like, the surgeries she was doing and the people she was helping, you know, a lot of people, obviously.
Elective versus necessity.
Yeah, elective versus necessity. And what defines elective? I feel like if you're born with some sort of defect in your face or like something that you're insecure about and you have an opportunity to fix that, like, well, you know, or, you know, women who suffer from breast cancer, right? And lose their breasts and breast reconstruction and what that can do. And it really kind of opened me up and enlightened me to, you know, the benefits of plastic surgery because there's so much kind of judgment around it. And so I invited Dr. Taban to come on and he's one of the top plastic surgeons in his field and just a really great guy. We just had a fun conversation about plastic surgery and hopefully the people listening find it to be insightful and informative. So that if it's something you're considering, questions you should be asking, things to consider, what's good, what's bad. And hopefully you guys will all enjoy this episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. Hopefully you will too. I'll stop rambling. We also have some merch. Go to vilefiles.com. Also, we appreciate you guys.
Merch.
Supporting the show. I know we had a big announcement about creating more shows under the Vile Files brand. Nothing's happening with the Vile Files. Like, that's not going anywhere. Fear not.
It's staying.
More to come there, but just so you know, your favorite podcast in the world isn't going anywhere. Nothing's changing with that. Should we just get to the show?
Just get to the show.
Dr. Taban, everybody. Dr. Taban, thanks so much for coming.
Pleasure to be here.
We thought it would be fun to have an episode talking about plastic surgery. And I got this idea talking to my girlfriend, Natalie, who works for you. And
yes.
And I got a lot of questions from audience members about plastic surgery. Since living in LA, it's something I've became a lot more aware of. I'm from Wisconsin. We don't talk about plastic surgery as much over there. And in fact, in a lot of places in this country, there's still like a negative stigma around plastic surgery, what it meant. I was joking with Natalie the other day when we were talking about having this conversation. It wasn't too long ago. Like, I just always thought like plastic surgery literally meant plastic, even if it like an all plastic surgeries, You know, it's just like as a kid, you didn't really understand what it meant. I just think there's
like you thought plastic was actually being inserted into people.
I don't know. I was just like plastic surgery. Okay.
Implants.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can understand with implants, it can, but like, I thought that's what it meant. I didn't know, you know, like we don't talk about that stuff in Wisconsin. In fact, I remember kind of like the, not that I was, we didn't talk about it. And there, again, there was a stigma about, oh, if you get plastic surgery, it's a negative thing. What does it mean? You're not satisfied with how you look or you were made, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought it'd be interesting to just have a discussion about the industry, what it's like. And then, you know, just inform the listeners how to go about it if they're interested. What's how to be safe, how to be smart, what to avoid, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you again for taking the time. I guess to kick things off, why don't you just talk a little bit about what you do? I know we talked about it a little bit in our intro, but you're an expert with eyes. And I guess why don't you just give a little bit of background on that and we'll go from there.
So I'm an oculoplastic surgeon. Which means I specialize in eye plastic surgery, both reconstructive and aesthetic. The path I took to become oculoplastic surgeon was medical school, then ophthalmology residency, and then fellowship in oculoplastics, which I did at UCLA. So that's how you become an oculoplastic surgeon, and you specialize around the eyes and the eyes, and that includes the eyelids and surrounding structures, the eye sockets, you know, the eyebrows and cheeks, and you can sometimes expand on that, but that's the main focus.
What made you want to get into that, like, as opposed to, I guess that's a question you ask all doctors, is what, why did you become a ocular plastic surgeon or a heart surgeon or a brain surgeon or a, you know, foot doctor?
A lot of times it's just life experiences. So I had some exposure to ophthalmology when I was in college.
Okay.
Always knew I wanted to become a surgeon. So that part I knew, but once you start med school, I already had that in the back of my head about ophthalmology, but then I also explored other fields, but I was always drawn into eyes. I was just thought eyes are so fascinating. I didn't know about oculoplastics part per se, but just eyes in general. So after I got into residency for ophthalmology at Cleveland Clinic, then you get exposed to different subspecialties within ophthalmology. And I was fascinated by oculoplastic. There's so many different procedures that you do, and a lot of them have immediate effect. Mm-hmm. So I really was fascinated by that. So that's what I wanted to do.
And you said there's so many different types of procedures. What are the most common ones that you are doing? And you're one of the leading doctors in this industry. And I think I think what Natalie told me is other doctors are now using a procedure you invented because it's doing less scarring on the eyes.
I've definitely modified procedures that I've learned during fellowship. So there are definitely new techniques that I've published, and there's one recently that I published in the, last month. Yeah, I take pride in what I do. I do try to push the envelope. So I've done that throughout my career since 2009 when I finished my fellowship. So I do get patients that come to me from all over the world for my expertise. LA is sort of the Mecca, you know, Beverly Hills. But, you know, people find me in different ways, and we'll get to that. So as far as some of the procedures that I do most commonly are, you know, you could call them eye jobs, but upper blepharoplasty or eyelid lift, lower blepharoplasty for patients who have under eye bags, dark circles that look tired, or droopy upper lids, we call that ptosis. So those are probably the three most common things that I do. So those are the three most common procedures that I do. Believe it or not, it's very common for people to have these issues at some point in their lifetime. Bags could be as young as a 20-year-old who has under eye bags genetically, and it just constantly makes her look tired. Or they could have droopy eyelids that it's congenital, or it could be age-related droopy upper lids. So it's pretty common throughout society to some extent, to various degrees.
Interesting. So in layman's terms, if you look tired or have droopy eyelids, what does that procedure look like in a sense? Like, what's going on that makes them less tired or improves the look that, or gets them the look that they are desiring or wanting?
The two most common causes are under eye bags and dark circles that just makes them so they look like they haven't slept, even though they could be as rested as they can be.
What causes that?
It's fat pockets under the eyes and hollowness around that area. So the bags and the surrounding hollowness give that appearance. Now, some people who are actually don't sleep, that can get worse because of fluid buildup. But most of the time, this is just the eye fat that they have.
Gotcha.
And it's against genetics and age related. So that's a very common cause of looking tired. And the other common cause of the droopy eyelid is droopy upper lids, where the upper lid is not as high as it should be. So they have this sleepy look. The eyelids are droopy, makes the eyes look tired and smaller. So what we do for that is it's a muscle thing. You tighten the muscle in the upper lid that controls the upper lid, and that elevates the upper lid. So that's ptosis surgery, which is different than upper blepharoplasty, which is another common thing we do. That has to do with more excess skin, loose skin in the upper eyelids. So those all things can be done individually or together depending on the patient's anatomy and desires.
And like you said, this could happen to someone, like you said, it could be 20. Is this something that does, for most people, get worse as they get older? Because I feel like, obviously, in a lot of plastic surgery, or a lot of people, I'm assuming, who get plastic surgery, they're trying to beat Mother Nature, or, you know, roll back the clock, or keep that youthful appearance. Or is this more just a genetic thing that this will always be an issue, or it may never be an issue? Like, say, like men with hair loss, some guys, you know, it might be 80 and just Brad Pitt's just flowing his hair. How's that work with eyes?
So it's really a combination. Again, genetics has a lot to do with it, but definitely aging makes it worse, and everybody ages differently. Some people, they look good until their eyes look good until they're 50. Some people age slower, some people age faster. Aging definitely makes things worse. So the eyelids will get droopier with age. Mm-hmm. The eye bags will get worse with age. But if you do surgery earlier on, that usually treats the issue and you don't have to repeat it. Although there's always exceptions where, and again, you can't stop the aging process, so aging will continue, but it usually doesn't get bad enough for the person to repeat those procedures, but it's possible.
Interesting. So that's funny. Interesting that you said that, because I was wondering, like, sometimes most plastic surgeries, is there, or is it just specific with eyes? Is there like a, there's, it sounds like, I was wondering, is there like a, once you open Pandora's box, you will always have to like keep fixing it, so to speak. But that's not necessarily the case with procedures.
Yeah, definitely not necessarily the case. You know, a lot of it is surgeons, experts dependent, you know, what exactly they're doing. You want to make sure what the surgeon is doing is not going to cause a different problem. For example, when you do the lower blepharoplasty for the under eye bags, you don't want to just remove the eye fat, because now they're going to trade the puffy bags for hollow sunken eyes, and then they look older in a different way by looking skeletonized. So the surgeon's skills are very important, how to manage that and give you the best, most natural, youthful results. So that's absolutely critical. That's why you have to pick expert for whatever you do. If you want to have a breast augmentation, tummy tuck, whatever you want to do, you want to go to the expert. And that's, I can't stress that enough.
How does one do that? Because to me, that would be scary, right? I guess, you know, if you have a strep throat, you're just like, hey, you know, test my throat and give me the medication, for most people who go to the doctor, but especially for elective stuff, or, you know, if someone has a heart attack, or, you know, if God forbid someone has cancer, you want to find the best. How do you go about doing that in a safe way and just have the confidence that you're dealing with someone who knows what they're talking about?
Research is very important. And you want to take your time researching whatever procedure you want to do. And don't be necessarily limited with geography. You want to go, again, to the expert. Sometimes in rural areas, you may not have an oculoplastic surgeon, or even if you do, it's not oculoplastic surgeons that does that specific procedure as well as can be done. You know, most of my patients find me by, you know, Google. They search a specific procedure, and, you know, they have to do their homework. There's a lot of false advertising, a lot of fake photos out there. You want to make sure that the surgeon has extensive before after gallery photos for whatever procedure you're going to do, not just one or two. And you want to make sure the photos are legit. You know, the before doesn't have, you want consistent lighting in the before after. There are other these gimmicks, you know, people can do to fake photos. So, you know, photo galleries are very important. They have to be legit. So, you know, that's how you're going to do part of the research. The person's training is very important. Where they've gone training, what kind of training they've had. It's hard to know for the average consumer what schools are most important, what programs. They don't know that, but at least they have to understand that an oculoplastic surgeon should have gone to medical school, residency, oculoplastics fellowship, not skip things or doing things half-ass.
I woke up today and my lady friend Natalie went off to work because she's in healthcare, and she looked glorious, just strutting her stuff, looking super hot, wearing figs. That's right, because she's in healthcare and she also loves fashion, and she mirrored the two together and put on her figs and looked like a goddamn supermodel. It was truly amazing. It was only because of the figs. Yeah. She looks terrible.
Nothing else about her makes her look that way. It's just the figs.
She was naked. I was like, yeah. And then she put her figs on. I was like, oh my God, beautiful. Smoking hot. Figs made scrubs modern with a focus of design, function, and comfort. They have a proprietary fabric that makes odor control, wrinkle, anti-wrinkle, and they antimicrobial. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I can't pronounce it. Doesn't mean you don't understand me.
It's fabric durability at its best.
That's right. Let's support our healthcare workers out there. God bless them. And also, if you just want to look smart and like a doctor, get yourself some figs and the people who are helping take care of all of us. Making healthcare professionals have awesome scrubs so they look their best, feel their best, and perform at their best. So if you are one of the awesome humans who work in healthcare, Figs wants you to wear their scrubs you deserve, and enjoy 15% off your first order. And if you're not working on the front lines, thank someone who is with the best scrubs in the world. Figs will give you 15% off too. Use code VIALL15, VIALL15 at checkout. Head to wearfigs.com, that is WEARFIGS.com, and enter my code VIALL15 at checkout. Get ready to love your scrubs. Shop three fresh looks that feature the laid-back elegance of our loungers and sectionals. That's right. That's Article. Article combines the curation of boutique furniture store with the comfort and simplicity of shopping online. Article's team of designers focus on beautifully crafted pieces, quality materials, and durable construction. They are dedicated to a modern aesthetic of mid-century Scandinavian, industrial, and bohemian designs. Fair prices, that's right, because they cut out the middleman. Middleman, get the fuck out. We don't need you. That's right. Sorry, middlemen. You're a dying breed. Fast and affordable shipping is available across the U.S. and Canada and is free on orders over $999. All in-stock items are delivered in 2 weeks or less. 30-day return policy with simple returns and exchanges. Article, it's great. It's fun. It's easy, convenient. They have a great furniture. I know. My friends know it too. And you should as well. Article is offering our listeners $50 off their first purchase of $100. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Go to article.com/VIALL and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/VIALL to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Yeah. Like, what are the regulations in that? Like, what does a doctor have to do or not have to do? Sometimes couldn't they get away with to say like, well, I can do that, right? You know, and so, and where's the patient protected based off of like not knowing that they should have taken all these steps?
Technically, any MD can do any procedure. But of course, in the US, you know, there is legal system involved. So most people don't just do that. However, there are people who did an emergency room, you know, they're emergency room doctors, and then they change and they go take a couple of courses, and then now they're doing tummy tucks and other things. So to answer your question, board certification is very important in the field that you want to have. Here's the other thing that happens a lot. A general plastic surgeon is board certified by the American Society of Plastic Surgery, but that doesn't mean they know how to do a specific procedure just because they're board certified. So board certification is an important requirement, but it's definitely not the only thing you should look at. plastic surgeon who does tummy tucks and boob jobs, you know, it's hard for that person to be good at everything, for them to be also good at rhinoplasty and facelift. So again, that's where I say expertise is very important. Mm-hmm. You want to go to people who specialize, focus on a specific procedure or in at least an anatomical area, not just they're all over the place. It's just impossible for someone to be good at everything. So expertise, experience, board certification, those are all important. That before you have the galleries, those are all the things that are important. And the other thing is these days, you know, online reviews. Now, online reviews can be faked, but it's important at least to look at online reviews as well.
Don't go to the Cheesecake Factory to get the best Italian food, even though they do serve pasta.
Right. You know,
Cheesecake Factory like does everything. They have Mexican, they have Chinese food, they have Italian. It's all very below average, wildly overpriced. If you want good Italian, find a great Italian local restaurant. But it's like that analogy is so like, of course, but then like people do that all the time. And I guess a lot of variables go into it because obviously money is involved. They want a procedure done. What I found most fascinating too, especially even just talking with Natalie, is that I think everyone just, they hear plastic surgery and they equate it with a vanity, right? And do you really need it? And then, you know, just talking with Natalie about some of the patients that, you know, either with you or other surgeons is, you know, a lot of people, like you said, are from genetics born a certain way or they have an accident. I know you do a lot of work with people who've experienced domestic violence and help reconstruct, you know, through, you know, their faces based off of accidents they've happened. So there's a lot of, you know, people walk around with, you know, stuff that's happened to them or they're born with that, like, they have confidence issues and there's a real kind of benefit from that. And I can appreciate maybe in some cases the desperation to get certain things fixed and that will get certain patients in trouble.
To answer your question about, you know, right before when you said, you know, what other things factor in, finances, convenience. Yeah, sometimes convenience, you want to get everything done at once. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not necessarily the best thing. You can do a facelift and a tummy tuck and eye job at the same time with the same person. You're not going to get the best of everything. But yeah, that factors into patients' decisions, and the finances also factor into patients' decisions. Now, you don't want to get ripped off in doing a procedure, but you also don't want to go to, you know, you kind of get what you pay for in life. But at the same time, yeah, there are people who, you know, outrageously charge. So you got to factor that in.
The stigma around plastic surgery where everyone, I think most people assume there's just, it's all about vanity, you know, taking someone who's already good looking, but they want to be better looking and they don't really need it. And that, I'm sure that happens a lot, but I guess I didn't appreciate just how much, like in terms of like plastic surgery, I know, like, you know, but breast augmentation, a lot of the, you know, breast augmentation that's done are say women who've have breast cancer, lost their breasts. And there's a lot of, you know, those procedures because it gives the women their confidence back. And I guess, you know, it makes so much sense when you hear about it, but a lot of people don't think about, you know, the good, you know, that like say plastic surgeons do, or like women who, again, who have domestic violence or physical abuse, they've had some permanent damage to their faces. And a lot of those things do happen. And it's kind of crazy. I think most people don't think about it and realize it. They always just assume it's all about vanity rather than just correcting something they've either were born with, had to deal with, that most people don't have to.
Blenders! Oh my god, when you combine fashion and function into one, you got yourself an amazing thing. Blenders sunglasses are kicking ass in the eyewear department. I got some blenders, and I'll tell you what. Boy, I get complimented all the time, but the important thing is I can wear them when I'm driving. I wear them when I'm doing yard work. That's right, I do yard work. And they stay on. I often sometimes wear them when I like to protect my eyes, right? You know, because I don't want to get things in them, right? I don't want to protect those eyes so I can see things. And I'll to be honest, I know I'll put my blenders on, and they're very functional that way. Hiking, walking, you know, just looking hot. Blenders does it all for me. Unlike expensive brand shades, you've probably lost or smashed in the past. Blenders are actually affordable.
So you're not going to cry as much when you inevitably lose them. I know I lose glasses. I don't cry when I do. Blender's team of in-house designers are constantly coming up with new styles. From organized polarized wraparounds, tortoise shell frames, which I love, with purple lenses, to classic gold arms or black lenses. Live life in forward motion with Blender's. Score 15% off your Blender's purchase. Visit blenderseyewear.com and enter promo code VIALLVIP. That's VIALL VIP. That's blenderseyewear.com, code VIALLVIP for 15% off. Blender's, rocked with pride worldwide. There are plenty of hard seltzers to choose from, but the rest suck because fizzy hard seltzer is the best option you can have because they taste great. They have antioxidant vitamin C. Fizzy brings something unique and delicious to the table. How often can you get a little bit of spirit in your body with a hard seltzer, but also get that antioxidant vitamin C? Well, now you can with Fizzy Hard Seltzer. There are plenty of hard seltzers to choose from, but with 8 bold and delicious dual fruit flavors and antioxidant vitamin C, Fizzy makes the choice a little easier. And it's a lot tastier. Pineapple, mango, black cherry lime, my favorite, strawberry, kiwi, blueberry, pomegranate, papaya, passion fruit, watermelon, strawberry, blackberry, lemon, and raspberry, tangerine. Ooh, baby, the list is extravagant. In April, Fizzy is launching its new limited hard seltzer in 4 delicious flavors, watermelon, peach, raspberry, and strawberry, with the same antioxidant vitamin C. So get your Fizzy now and get your hard seltzer drink on, baby. With Fizzy, you can enjoy refreshment now with antioxidant vitamin C. Upgrade your hard seltzer to Fizzy. To find out where you can purchase Fizzy, go to fizzyhardseltzer.com/VIALL. That is Fizzy, V-I-Z-Z-Y, hardseltzer.com. Must be 21 or older.
Plastic surgery doesn't mean cosmetic only. There's reconstructive aspect of it as well. So plastic surgery encompasses reconstructive and cosmetic surgery. Yeah, people have to understand what plastic means. I definitely help a lot of patients who've had either trauma-related eye deformities or congenital, but it could be, again, age-related. There's so many different factors. It could be neurologic. It could be other reasons that cause a specific problem. It could be major or it could be minor, but minor can seem big to a specific person. You know, people have different insecurities, mm-hmm. and they want to feel and look better. They want to feel better about themselves when they look in the mirror. So it's you can't judge those people for what they want to do. Again, a lot of what I do ranges from a baby to a 90-plus-year-old when I've done surgeries. So there are different reasons throughout that spectrum. Some of them don't absolutely need things. Some of them do need it. Some of them want it. It just depends on each person. Yes, there has been a stigma throughout history, but you know, it has come a long way for the better and still changing. To me, the important things are, you know, again, having a natural result with the procedure you're going to have. So patient feels better about themselves without looking done. So they don't have this insecurity. Look in the mirror, and they don't have this insecurity after surgery thinking somebody else knows they've done something as well. So it's important what kind of result they get that will make them feel better.
Yeah. You mentioned that you like to push the limits, so to speak. How does one do that after med school? Like, how, if you have an idea, it's like, oh, I think this could work. I think I could make an adjustment in this procedure and therefore have less scarring. Do you just try that out, or where do you test that stuff? Yeah. Or that, I find that to be fascinating, knowing, you know, you're operating on people and then you, how do you go about publishing papers and make those advancements?
I did a lot of publishing throughout my training, but then, so I've had some experience publishing. So I'm in fact, a lot of experience publishing. But as far as ideas, you know, you have to kind of have the guts to try things in a safe way, maybe a little at a time. You have to have the right patient for it. Sometimes patients themselves give you ideas and say, why don't you do this? Can you do this? Or can we do this and this? And if the patient is willing to try it and the surgeon has the confidence and the skills to do it, then everything comes together. So that's based on my experience. Of course, there's also cadaver courses that I'm part of instructor, and also I try things at UCLA. So if I want to also try something, I can also try in cadavers. But a lot of it has to do really with the surgeon's, you know, experience, confidence, skills, and just trying to always think, what can I do to make things better, easier, quicker recovery, better results. So, you know, the surgeon, a good doctor, anything, any profession, you always got to be thinking about those things.
Yeah. So is that conversation, a patient might come in and say, hey, doc, I don't like this aspect of my eyes, or can you do this? And you might say, well, I don't typically do that. And then you kind of almost assess the risk or if it's done. And then I'm assuming you might tell the patient, have you ever told a patient, I haven't done that a lot, but I want to try something new with you, but here's the risk. Have you ever had that conversation? Yeah.
Not necessarily in those terms per se, some variation, yes. So, you know, it's not usually something totally new. It's usually a modification of a procedure or combining this procedure with that procedure that hasn't been done. So those are some of the things that I've done very successfully. But yeah, I mean, you have to be honest with the patient. Again, that's why, as I said, patients need to also question. When you go for a consultation, question the doctor about what they're going to do. Again, see before after gallery. See other examples the doctor has done. Again, you can push the envelope to do things. For example, one of the things I've done is bulging eye surgery for not just thyroid patients who get bulging eyes, but I had a patient that wanted it. He had very insecurity about his big eyes congenitally. So I did it for cosmetic reasons or non-thyroid related case for that patient. And that's how that started, where I published on this in a aesthetic surgery journal about my experience of doing bulging eye surgery for aesthetic reasons in non-thyroid patients.
So prior to that, it was only done for people who had a thyroid
disease. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. And what was the, why wasn't that done before? I mean, I can't assume that your patient was the first one who didn't like his bulging eyes.
Right. It's not, first of all, nobody would talk to them about this. There's nothing in the literature or, you know, anybody doing this. Still, that's the case. Yeah. There's only a few surgeons who do it for that reason. And the reason it hasn't been done before, because it's a complex surgery. There are some risks involved. So the surgeon has to be really confident with very low complication risk and to want to do something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not, so that's those are the reasons.
Yeah, that's interesting. We were talking a little bit before we started in terms of how social media, selfies, and even recently with the pandemic, the increase in Zoom calls, how that's affected even specifically your industry in doing eye surgery. Because I feel like back in the day, you know, plastic surgery, nose jobs, boob jobs, that was like the two most common ones. And yet now it makes a lot of sense. People are taking selfies and they're seeing their face, and there's always these filters to under eye filter kind of stuff like that. And in yours, it sounds like you're seeing an uptick in the requests in cosmetic surgeries based off of their need to have better selfies.
Yes. So selfies from several years ago, I think for all plastic surgeons, there was an uptake in number of patients that would see and procedures they would do. Especially, I think, faces with selfies, but other procedures as well. But then during the pandemic, with so many video Zoom calls, people would then see themselves on Zoom, and now they look tired. You know, again, that's probably the number one thing. They look tired, or they have asymmetry with the eyes, or something along those lines, as far as my profession goes. But again, it could be something else on their face for another plastic surgeon. So they would see those things, and then it would bother them, and they want to, again, feel better about themselves, look better. So that's one of the reasons there was definitely an uptake. The other reason specifically is that I had more downtime during the pandemic to do any kind of surgery, because I had the downtime to be home and recover. And one other funny thing is with the mask factor, masks would cover their face, their nose and mouth, but the eyes would be visible to everyone else. So then they would more focus if, they didn't like their eyes. And that was the only feature they would show to people, because everything else was covered with a mask. So that was another reason for uptake in patients wanting to do eye plastic surgery.
That's fascinating. How many patients do you turn away, if any? And what would make you turn away a patient who came in and say, hey, doc, I want to do X, Y, and Z. They recognize it's a fully cosmetic request. What would make you, or is it just like, hey, I don't think you need it, but if you really want it, it's still safe. So it's up to you if you want to, I'm going to just be honest with you about like the degree of enhancement that you can expect. But other than that, it's up to you.
I think it's kind of a little bit of everything. There are certain patients who are something I just can't do. And I have to tell them sometimes they don't take it the right way. And I've had negative reviews online because of patients who didn't like the way, tell them, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that procedure. Or, really it's about unrealistic expectations. So if I don't feel like there is realistic expectations there, and I can't make the patient happy, then I have to turn them away, or at least modify things. I say, this is not exactly possible, but we can do this, or we can do that to make your eyes better, or variation of what they're talking about, or maybe. So there is sometimes a negotiation involved. This is not realistic, but this is realistic. These are the risks.
What is one myth about the industry, about plastic surgery, that you think is unfair or that you think should be debunked out there? Because it's just simply not true, if anything.
I mean, a lot of myths have some truths to them. We already talked about this stigma of plastic surgery. And plastic surgery is not just cosmetic surgery. There's a lot of reconstructive aspects as well. Again, it could be a myth, but some truth. And, there's some arrogance involved with plastic surgeons. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't like that aspect of it. And, there's a lot of plastic surgeons who like to flash nice cars and nice watches and this and that. And so there is some truth to that. I mean, you see it on Instagram. But I don't know if that's a myth. I mean, there's some truth to that.
So stigma, yeah. Or maybe the myth is like, not all plastic surgeons or even surgeons are like that. Where
right, yeah.
There's some
exactly.
good ones or some
yeah,
humility.
That's what I was trying to, exactly.
And then maybe that might, like you said, speak to like when you're looking for, like what is their end goal, the plastic surgeon. Medicine's obviously always changing, always advancing. It's been, I'm assuming, crazy. Where do you think the industry is going, even specifically with ocular surgeries? Where is it going, and what are some of the, crazy advances we can expect in the next few years?
I can tell you in the past 5-7 years, there was a push towards doing a lot of injectables. Less surgery, more injectables. For example, specifically for under eye area, trying to do a lot of filler injections under the eyes, either for the hollowness or to camouflage the bags they have. But more and more have we learned that the more fillers you do specifically under the eyes, it's not necessarily a good thing. In fact, that was one of my publications, for example, that came about, that I saw so many problems with under eye fillers.
I've heard that like with my female friends in the area where they've done it. And then I have other friends like who look to do that, and they've heard from doctors, maybe it was even you, is like, you could really damage your eyes.
There's probably thousands of them done every day, and most patients by far do well. But over time, I do think fillers under the eyes cause problems.
And how so?
The fillers are semi-liquid, and after a while, they kind of, stretch the soft tissue, and then now you see the filler, and it has a, what we call a Tyndall effect. It has a bluish color to it, or it's puffy. So it's important when you do fillers, it has to be underdone. And again, there is a limit to me how many times it should be done. Again, every case is different. Depends on the anatomy. It depends on the thickness of the skin they have. But that was definitely a big trend over the past 7 years, doing a lot of injections. But we see more and more that that's still being done. But at least the experts in my field realize some of the ramifications of it, and they don't push it as much, and they have to deal with the ramifications with the fillers under the eyes. Again, this is specifically under the eyes. Mm-hmm. Not other parts of the
face.
But
and it's interesting you say that, because I had heard that from friends, and like you said, like but living in LA, you hear friends are talking about procedures or have an interest, and that is, I thought even for me, I heard and noticed that the disconnect between what a lot of people were doing and then hearing that that might not be a good thing, and knowing that it seems to be so prevalent out there.
I mean, I get it. The patients want less downtime, save money, quick and easy. So fillers have been done a lot and are still being done. And again, there is a role for a lot of patients in my opinion, in a temporary fashion, not something long-term for under the eyes. Again, not talking about the rest of the face. In fact, the upper lids, I'm a big fan of filler injections, upper eyelids. But I'm talking about the under the eyes. To me, it's not a good long-term treatment. Now going forward, as far as other things happening, I always try to, as I said, push the envelope, think of new things. As I said, a couple of months ago, I published a new manuscript that talked about combined upper blepharoplasty and upper lip filler injections. Again, that was one of those things that, I do that. Why don't I do it together? And I did it for patients who would come from out of town, because I have a lot of patients who come from other states, and it was inconvenient to do things separate times. So I said, why don't I combine these two? And it worked great. And I do it every day, many times, and I published it. So I can't speak of other aspects of plastic surgery, what's gonna come down the pipeline, but I'm always looking to improve things that at least I do, and in a less invasive fashion, more convenient for the patient.
What's the recovery time for the doing a procedure on your eyes, are people able to see, like, what, or is,
yeah,
it vary?
Good questions. Yeah. So people can see, depends on the procedures. If you're doing an upper lower blepharoplasty, the first day you have some blurry vision, the next day should be seeing fine. But again, a lot of it is surgeons dependent. And this is in my hands, what the techniques that I use, I speak for me. The main recovery phase that people care about, usually it's about 10 days that it looks like they had surgery because of obvious bruising, swelling, and also they have limitations and things they can't do. Okay. They can't do, they can't exercise. They have to sleep on the back. So it's mainly 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. That's the main healing phase. Most patients after that 10 days, really, they should look presentable. They can go public, people with makeup on, at least people shouldn't know that I had surgery. This healing takes longer than 10 days. It takes several months for full healing, and everybody heals differently. But main part that people care about as far as downtime, they have to take time off from work, is usually 10 days.
Yeah, like the how long will people be able to tell I had surgery?
Right. Again, in my hands, with technique that I use, it's about 10 days.
Interesting. We talked more about injections, and I know not necessarily your specialty, but we talked about fillers, and then there's Botox. Are there health? I'm always curious, because that seems to be the most common one, Botox, wrinkles. Is there a certain age where you recommend people to start doing that stuff? Is there a downside to Botox? You hear people talking about it could even help with migraines. Is that real? Is that an excuse? Where do people draw the line? And is it really just a cosmetic preference rather than a health concern or benefit?
Botox is one of the safest things out there. And it has both functional uses. It definitely works for some cases of migraine that have to do with tension, headache. There's so many different kinds of migraines, but definitely it works for some migraines. And it works for some other, you know, functional issues, spasms in other parts of the body. So even eyelid spasms. So there's definitely a functional benefit, but definitely has a cosmetic benefit as well to reduce what we call dynamic wrinkles that have to do with movement. So frown lines, forehead lines, crow's feet, it helps with those both immediately, but also it helps in a preventative fashion, because if you keep frowning, then that's the skin is going to crack in those, in the, we call the 11 lines or the forehead lines. So if you reduce the movement, then there is a preventative effect as well for Botox.
Interesting. I'm assuming most of your, most of your procedures, is it mostly on women versus men? Is it, are there a surprising amount of men doing more of these procedures, or do you find it to be more dominated in, for women getting this elective surgery?
It's definitely dominated by women, but more and more men are doing it. In my practice, it's actually probably 80-20 ratio, 4-1 ratio. Mm. So 4 women, 1 man. This is just different procedures. But and when it comes to men, it's even more important how procedures are done. Specifically eyelid surgery to make him, again, natural. Usually, for example, you don't want to do a brow lift in a man. There are always exceptions, but
what's a brow lift again?
Eyebrow lift, forehead lift.
So you just kind of raise it up?
Yeah, so it looks feminizing in a man. And also if you do an aggressive upper blepharoplasty, it looks feminizing. So you have to understand the differences in sexes, and also ethnicities factor in as well. Different ethnicities you have to factor in as well.
Well, that's really interesting. I never even thought about that. Like, what? How do you learn about that? Is that just trying it out, or study like the how just different ethnicities, their genetics, and how they're made, and then how procedures that's, affect it?
It's part of the hopefully your fellowship training or residency fellowship training. But like anything else, you gotta master it yourself. So again, that's where the surgeon's experience comes into play. Again, I've been doing this for 12 years now. A lot of cases. So the main ethnic differences are when it comes to upper lids, it's the Asian eyelid versus a non-Asian eyelid. So there's definitely a difference there that's very, very critical. So that's important for the audience to know.
Interesting. And do you like? Do you think that more men will have more elective surgery as, you know, society, I think there puts a pressure on women as they get older. There's a double standard for, you know, men are told they age more gracefully. But like as we continue to have a more progressive society, you know, gender roles are kind of overlapping. There seems, you know, do you think more men, whether it's because they care more about their looks or they feel that pressure, or maybe women feel less pressure because they're just like, fuck it, I don't care. Where do you see that going? Or do you think it will continue to be pretty much the same? Or have you noticed, I know you mentioned men are a little bit more, but do you see that spike continuing or that increase?
I think so. It's all about, I think, again, men educating themselves and, you know, learning. You know, my dad, I operated my dad years ago when he had under eye bags. He was one of those people who would never think about any cosmetic surgery. But, you know, after a while, he sees that, you know, these are making me look really older and tired. I'm tired of looking at these bags. So because he knows my work and he's seen before after photos, he knows that he's not going to look done. He's not going to have problems. So he does it. So I think if men more and more realize what's possible, then they will do more. But of course, society has a lot to do with it too. We talked about the selfies and Zooms and everything. I mean, definitely when I say the Zoom factor or it includes men as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I take selfies. It's embarrassing, but I do. There's the Kardashian effect with plastic surgery is something that's been discussed, whether it's fair or not fair. But you notice it, right? And you see more people, more women trying to look like a certain type of person. And recently it seems to be the more of a Kardashian look. Do you notice that, or yeah, is that accurate? Or
when it comes to specifically eyes, Kendall Jenner eyes, I get that request. You know, how can I get that kind of a look? So Bella Hadid, there are other beautiful ladies out there that people want to look like. And again, that's definitely a subset of my patients who I just have to say no to, you know, this is not realistic, but we can do some, you know, we can get it maybe to this much, or yeah, there are things.
You're almost like, these just aren't your eyes.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah. It's
how she was made.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. She got the genetic lottery. Yeah.
And they always question me, what does she do? What does she do? I mean, I think most of it is genetics on them for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, that topic always comes up.
Going off of that, when you're like out in public or at a restaurant or talking to someone new, are you able to automatically know if they've had things done, what they've had done? Like, are there little signs that you as the surgeon can see that typical people wouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, I would. Some of it has to do with if it was done in a natural way or unnatural way, but also, I mean, that's the main thing. If it's done something natural, I shouldn't be able to tell, except if I know the guy is 80 years old and his eyes look 50 years old, he probably did something. Same thing goes for a facelift. You know, if they're that old and they have tight neck, I mean, you know, they did something with the neck. They did a neck lift, facelift. So it's still important to look natural. And you know, that stigma is going to keep going away in a way. It just, I think to me, it's important to have natural results. I think the stigma, a lot of it is when people change things for the worse, and now they look done, they look unnatural. I mean, that's, I think a lot of why stigma is out there because of plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. Just, it's the unnatural look. So I can't stress that enough. You know, whatever you do, you want to have natural results. You want to look more youthful for yourself. You want to look more rested. You don't want to look done. You don't want to look pulled, you know.
Yeah, pull. Because there is a, if you go hang out in Beverly Hills, let's say on a Saturday afternoon and go shopping, and there's like a group of women who, let's say over the age of 40, and some of them all kind of look the same. And they all look like it's a very specific plastic surgery look. Is that, do you think that will keep happening, or what were you saying, something, Chrissy?
I was just going to ask, is there a responsibility of the doctor at some point to be like, look, like you're going to look crazy.
But there's so
like,
many, yeah, but
this is what, this is where you need to stop. Like, is that like, is the doctor have any responsibility to be like, this is where you need to stop putting stuff in your face? Or is it like, no, that's what they want, so we do it.
No, there should definitely be a responsibility, but that doesn't mean I mean, there's, when people shop around, they're going to find, unfortunately, somebody who's going to say yes to more filler, to more lip filler, to, you know, it just, you know, especially to fillers and things, I push away patients a lot. They said, if you do more, it's going to look fake. You know, no more this, no more that. But there are a lot of doctors who don't.
It's like people asking for dating advice. Let's go around asking someone until they get the answer they want.
Yeah.
It's just that's like, true. Yeah. You know, oh, wait, you think I should break up with them? Fuck you. All right. Hey.
I was just watching Housewives of New Jersey, and the whole first episode of the whole season is all about the breast lifts, the face fillers, the butt implants they all got. And like, it was, but like one girl's mouth is like this and she talks like that. And it was just like crazy.
But yeah, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
They didn't tell her like it was okay to stop.
In Beverly Hills, there's a certain look of older woman that they clearly have done. I don't know what they've done, but they,
yep,
They look different, but also the exact same, like clones.
You could also say like it's now becoming a thing in like our like in the 20-year-olds, like the lip filler, the microblading of the eyebrows. Like there's now a look of like the beauty influencers too that is just as bad and as extreme.
Well, yeah, that brings up an interesting point. It's just like you're getting it's more and more common with younger women. Where do you draw the line between? And we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but does it affect how they age, right? If you have all this plastic surgery in your early to mid-20s, will you end up looking older later or have to keep getting more surgery as a result of, you know, a bunch of fillers, a bunch of Botox, some, you know, ocular surgery, lip injections, et cetera, et cetera?
So I can't speak of other plastic surgery, but when it comes to eye plastic surgery injectables, I mean, Botox goes away. You know, that wears off. So that has no long-lasting effect, per se. Again, it has a preventative effect for wrinkles.
It, like, disintegrates?
Yeah. It just, the effect goes away.
Huh. My sister uses that in her neck because she got whiplash, and that's how that helps
Right.
her
so
neck.
It has a lot of functional benefits, as I said.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Fillers, like I did mention, the, for example, the under-eye filler.
Yeah.
I do think over time it's going to cause problems. So whoever is doing it has to understand that there has to be a limit to it. When it comes to surgery, we also talked about one of the key things about eye plastic surgery is you don't want to remove fat. You don't want to remove fat from under the eyes when you're doing lower blepharoplasty. You don't want to remove fat from upper eyelids. There are always exceptions, but usually you don't want to do that. When you do, either immediately you're going to look more hollow, sunken, older, or as you age, when you lose more of your fat, then it becomes more pronounced. So again, a lot has to do with how the surgery is done. The other thing people should think about is, you know, some of these things are fat. So, you know, the butt implants and that sort of thing, you know, you don't want to do things because they're in right now and 5-10 years from now they're not, and then you're stuck with something you've done that is permanent.
That's an interesting point, like a fad, you know, like a big butts are in versus small butts, like skinny jeans versus baggy jeans, right? Like it's almost a fad. But that's,
you know, bigger boobs almost always in, but now it's getting smaller. So, you know, again, I'm not into that
field.
They're
almost always in.
Yeah.
You're never almost always in.
I'm not in that field, but I see that other surgeons now they're promoting, you know, very natural size implants, which I'm in favor of. Anyway, I don't do that. But again, you want to be careful what you do with your body in thinking long term as well, not just because an influencer is doing it and it looks good and it's in to do it for the next few years.
How many surgeries, if any, are reversible? You've seen women like take their implants out, their breast implants. Does that work the same way with butt implants? And if they do that, I'm assuming you never really can go back to the way you started, or is that not true?
I don't do those procedures, but I'm sure when you do implants like that, there is some stretching effect. So if you remove implants, now you have saggy tissue that needs to be tucked. And again, I do think it can be done. I mean, women do it all the time where, you know, they downsize or they even have naturally large breasts and they want to get the reduction. So there is lifting and tucking that can be done. But again, you don't want to do it unless you don't want to get to that position if you just think ahead.
Interesting. Any more questions, ladies, before we let Dr. Tabang?
One last thing I think is worth talking is anesthesia types.
Oh, yeah.
You want me to start?
Okay. Yeah, please.
The other key point about any surgery, but I'll talk about eye plastic surgery, is anesthesia options. There are three types of anesthesia: general anesthesia, twilight anesthesia, and just local anesthesias. So general is when you completely put out tube down your throat, breathing for you. For some surgeries, you know, heart surgery, brain surgery, a lot of surgeries, you're forced to do that. But when it comes to eye plastic surgery, especially upper blepharoplasty, lower blepharoplasty, these common things, it's really, in my opinion, overkill. But it's been done most surgeons out there do general anesthesia. And to me, it's not necessary. I think it's really overkill. If the patient wants to be out of it, they can do it under IV sedation, similar to when they have a colonoscopy. So it's this dominant anesthesiologist, they're out of it. But a lot of patients in my practice, and that's one of the things that I do a lot and people come to me for, is I do these procedures under local anesthesia where, you know, first I give them Xanax to relax them and then I numb the eyelids. It has a lot to do with the technique of the numbing injection and the confidence and the skills of the surgeon to do eyelid surgery under local anesthesia. So the advantages of local anesthesia are it's quicker healing, no general anesthesia issues, no nausea, vomiting, no foggy brain issues for a week, and definitely no long-term issues that general anesthesia can cause over time. You want to limit the number of general anesthesia you do in your lifetime. So when it comes to eyelid surgery, I think it's really important to avoid general anesthesia. So go with the local anesthesia or IV sedation if you have to.
I've never heard of that, that there's risks involved and that there's... Why is there a limit to how much a patient should do?
There's studies out there that the number of general anesthesia, there's no specific number, but the more you do, and some people are more prone to it, the more you do and the longer cases can affect the brain and other things. So in general, you want to minimize general anesthesia use unless you have to do such a thing.
Wow.
Does that also mean that you can do those procedures like in office and they don't require an operation room?
Exactly. Now, everything I do specifically is in an operating room. However, there's no anesthesiologist when I do a local case. It's just me and my assistant, for example, Natalie, and the patient. Just like you would go to a dental office where it's just the dentist, the assistant, and the patient, and numbing injections, except we do give an oral Xanax to relax the patient. But again, it's not for everybody. Some people are really freaked out, and then they can easily choose the IV sedation option. And that's a very safe option. To me, just general anesthesia is really overkill.
Do you think that could be a way for a patient to help qualify certain surgeons? And what I mean by that is, you know, and you're speaking specific to your industry and you're giving your expert opinion about that. But knowing that about general anesthesia, if there are a certain procedures out there that some doctors are doing more local than general, is that suggesting that maybe the doctors doing general may don't know as much or kind of lazy, or, you know, there's a reason why they're doing these things that are more dangerous?
That's what they're used to.
Okay.
That's the main reason. Perhaps they don't have the confidence and the skills of doing also the case when the patient is awake.
Uh-huh.
They're afraid of something. But a lot of it is what they're used to, what they're experienced. So if they always done it on their general, unfortunately, they keep doing general. Where again, to me, it's really unnecessary for most eyelid procedures.
Gotcha. But yeah, that would almost speak to like maybe that means they're just always used to doing it a certain way. That might suggest that they're not necessarily as innovative or as confident in their skills, but they certainly can do it. But
yeah, definitely, you can say that.
Doing the basics.
Yeah, you can definitely say that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's something I would never have thought of. Any other questions, ladies, before we let the good doctor go? The good doctor. It's just fun to say. This has been really fun, Dr. Dabat. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Really, really interesting stuff. And I hope that the people listening feel more informed about plastic surgeries. I mean, it's definitely one of those things. There's a lot of thoughts and opinions and a lot of false and bad information floating out there. So it's always nice to become more informed about these things so people can make better decisions. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We always appreciate it. Don't forget to send in your questions at asknick@castme.com, cast with a K. Dr. DeBond, before we do let you go, if people are interested in learning more about what you can do for them, if they want to reach out to you, get a consultation, where can they find you?
So we do either a virtual or in-person consultations. You can call 310-278-1836 or go on the website, tabonmd.com. You can also email office@tabonmd.com or also follow me on Instagram, TabonMD.
And we'll put all his information on our episode bio if you guys are interested in learning more. Thanks so much, guys. We appreciate it. We'll be back on Monday.